For years, AHEC, through the joint efforts of the U.S. hardwood industry and the Foreign Agricultural Service of the USDA, has been promoting American hardwood worldwide. AHEC's efforts have helped many HMA companies survive the recent market fluctuations. With us this morning, before heading off to China, is AHEC Executive Director Mike Snow. He will be providing an update to AHEC's latest promotional efforts in his presentation entitled Global Promotion and Innovative Uses of American Hardwood. Together, let's welcome Mike Snow.
Thanks, Jack. And I wanted to thank Linda also for this opportunity. It's been, I think, 2 years since I was here last, and I always enjoy this meeting, but was shocked to see the number of people here. I think that's a great sign for the industry. What I want to talk about, Linda wanted me to talk a little bit about how we go about the promotion programs overseas. As a lot of you know, AHEC, we really just have one mission. It's promotion, period, and it's promotion overseas. And we do that with a combination of resources. We do receive quite a bit of money from the U.S. Department of Agriculture under the Market Access Program. I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. And then, of course, we depend on in-kind contributions and dues from the industry itself to carry out these promotional efforts. We're based out of Washington, D.C., where you see in the dark blue is where we have actual physical offices with employees, and where you see in the light green are where we have consultants on the ground, but not necessarily in office. Really kind of break down the way we do promotion is it's a little bit complicated because you're looking at different targets. Domestically here, by and large, the trade, the people who buy and make things out of lumber have a pretty good idea about American hardwoods. It's what they've always worked with. Architects maybe less so, and I think there's a lot of things that we do overseas targeting architects. I think that could very, very easily be used here. But finding new markets is not just finding new people to buy your lumber. It's also finding new ways to use it. And technology is really helping that. And there's two things I think that are really going to change the game for us moving forward. New uses for what I feel could be very large volumes of American hardwood that we've never had before, but I think that are quite possible now. So I'll spend some time talking about them. But essentially, we have a four-pronged strategy. The first one, of course, is industry networking. I mean, you can't do promotion, particularly overseas, without creating opportunities for exporters and importers to meet. And that's a big part of what we do moving forward. And obviously, we do a lot of trade shows. We'll do pavilions where companies can come in at a very small, nominal cost. They get a full turnkey booth within some of these pavilions. We've got next week Interzum Guangzhou. We've got 36 American companies that'll be under the AHEC umbrella. Each company is only paying $500 for a 10 square meter booth with furniture, your build out, your electricity, your Wi-Fi, signage, the whole deal. It's great opportunities to get out in front of some of those overseas buyers and customers. Also, conventions, particularly in China, it's such a big market, and going city to city is very difficult. So we create, opportunities we do every year. Our convention in China, it's going to be in Qingdao this year. Qingdao is the old, up in the north, it's the old German. It was Port Arthur under the Germans. That's where the Qingdao beer comes from. A lot of you probably know. We expect to have in the area of 500 to 600 Chinese companies represented at this. And of course, each AHEC member that goes has the opportunity not only during the two-day convention and all the networking, but we host our own mini trade show where each of the companies gets their own table during an evening reception and has that chance to sit down face-to-face with those Chinese buyers. So that whole networking and bringing people together, of course, is a big part of what we do, but it's really more market access than promotion. So we start talking about what is promotion? How do you create awareness? How do you change people's attitudes? How do you change their behaviors, more importantly? And that's where things like, first of all, education come in. But what is education? The first thing you have to know is who's your target audience and what is it they need to know? And as a big part of our funding every year, we're required through the USDA to provide an evaluation showing what are the constraints we're facing, what are we doing to address those constraints, and how do we show whether or not we're making any progress against theirs? This one, to just sort of start off right in the beginning, this one is asked, we have about 2,500 people, this is in the trade, asking them what types of information would be helpful for them to increase their use or their comfort in using American hardwoods. And of course, the first one, I don't know why it didn't come out in here, but it's more information on species, their uses, and grades. The second most important one was environmental information on legality, on life cycle, and on sustainability. So those two together are really the two big ones that this is what the buyers, this is whether it's furniture manufacturers, importers, are saying the information they need from AHEC or from our industry in order to increase their consumption. We take a look at one of those with, in there just grading. We were kind of surprised to find how low, particularly in areas like Europe, where we've been doing business for a long time, how low the knowledge actually is amongst the trade, and these are importers and users, on NHLA grading rules. I mean, we look at, you know, globally, only about 9% last year said they have an excellent understanding. And these are people that are trading in timber. This isn't just surveying people off the street. You know, a little bit higher, 17 say very good, good. So obviously, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And we had been looking for years and years that grading seminars, oh, that's for new markets, that's for China, that's for India. We don't need to do that in Europe anymore. We found we were wrong, and again, by having this data, we're able to show that we were wrong, and we've really picked up the last couple of years the number of grading seminars that we do. And this is important because when you ask, when you go back and ask those same people, if they understood the grades better, would they be very likely or somewhat more likely to increase their consumption? And they're telling us in large numbers that absolutely, if they knew what they were buying, if they understood it, they would feel much more comfortable. So that's why we spend a lot of time and I know, I think Lorna's back here from NHLA, but we've been working with Dana Spester, the chief inspector, for years. And Dana, bless him, he's put in quite a few miles, but it makes a huge difference going through. We've been running literally probably in the last 2 years, we've probably had around 80 to 90 grading seminars in I think 30 different countries perhaps. And we're seeing the difference now. Look at in Europe, just these last 3 years that we've focused on it now and had Dana out there, you know, 3 or 4 times a year. Look at their changes now. How many people feel, you know, within Europe that it's either very good or somewhat good understanding? We've seen clear increases over the last years in Europe and particularly in the Middle East, in Latin America. So those areas, and of course in Asia, so those areas where we've had Dana out there pounding the pavement, doing these seminars, going into importers, talking to their salespeople, talking to their buyers, and really trying to get that across, we're seeing now that that's making a difference. And of course, it comes back always to the sales, and we can see in a lot of these countries the sales going up. Really, a second part of what we do is using our networks overseas, whether it's the timber traders with the architects, to try to keep our eyes open for real innovative uses of American hardwoods in different countries so that we can take that and through our PR machine, through our PR companies that we have spread all over the world, we can tell the story of these innovative uses of American hardwoods. This is incredible. This is in, these are tulip wood, yellow poplar staircases that are in a office building in Tel Aviv in Israel. And this was something that an architect was familiar with AHEC, came with us, got some information on strength properties and things on tulip wood and how well that would work. And of course, by being able to show this now, we've had this picked up, this article in, I don't even know now, we're well over 100 different magazines and design websites around the world that have taken, you know, we did an interview, we did our own photography, we do interviews with the architect, we do interviews with the engineers, kind of package that together. But finding these things all over the world is a good way to just keep that message out there, to keep American hardwoods, you know, keep the use of woods in here. This is unbelievable. This is Zaha Hadid, who unfortunately died this past year in Azerbaijan. That's a theater, all American, solid American white oak right throughout that. So by keeping these, we're able to, you know, we're able to take, so these are things that we're not involved in the actual manufacture. But through our networks, we find out that these things are going on, and we're able to amplify that messaging and get it out through our PR machine. And then, of course, how do you measure that? How do you know? We use a service called WalkTalker, which is essentially goes through and scans globally for different words we put in. It's American hardwoods. We have all the species. We have AHEC things. And we start looking at where the pickups are, where they're coming from. Is it online? Is it in magazines? Is it television shows? And it sort of keeps a running track month to month. But it also keeps a running track, when we talk about wood, on how much positive versus negative chatter there is about something. And, you know, so it kind of gives us an idea of where, in different countries, where people's attitudes are, or where at least the press things that are going through, where their attitudes are concerning things like wood. But the real fun part we do is when we get to do our own projects. You know, sometimes you have to create your own story moving forward. And this is where things like, you know, new markets for underutilized species, one of the issues we face in places like Europe, you know, big market, but it's a white oak market. They want white oak, and then if you don't have that, they want the other white oak. And if you don't have that, then sorry. So how do you get them more interested in other species in these areas? New applications I'll talk about in a second. Promoting underutilized species, and again, this is where the fun part comes in. This is where the creativity comes in. When you have a millennial do your slideshow, you end up with things like this that move. I guess that's. But we had we worked this year a program that we did earlier this or late last year in Spain, where we worked with four very well-known architects in Spain, and we paired them with four celebrities in Spain. One was a best-selling author. One was an architect who is the president of the Pritzker Prize Committee. If you don't know the Pritzker Prize, it's essentially the Nobel Prize of architecture. One was a paleoanthropologist. Now, how a paleoanthropologist can be a celebrity is a little unusual, but this is the person that actually found, if you heard Lucy, you know, the oldest human skeleton. This was the anthropologist that found Lucy. Very, very well known, very gregarious character. And the final was the Arsacs, the only four Michelin four-star restaurant in the world up in the Basque Country, a father and daughter team. So we paired up these four celebrities with four architects to come up with something out of wood, something they've always wanted, never really quite been able to find, and how do we, you know, what could we do for them? So they sat down together. This chair was for the writer, and it was really, it's made out of solid cherry. It's pretty amazing. They used the same 3D body scanners that the Formula One, people that make Formula One cars, because those seats are absolutely completely designed towards their body, and you'll see on this chair that the same thing was done. This is absolutely designed around his body. And it's made so he can sit up and put his legs down on the floor to write, or when the recliner goes back, to lay there and read. And every single cutout, you wouldn't think a hard chair like this would be comfortable, but it is for him, not comfortable for anyone else. This is the cabin for the paleoanthropologist. And again, the pieces in themselves aren't really the point. It's how you take this then and expand that message out. And this is where, again, when you start out with, you know, the chairman of the Pritzker Prize Committee, when you start out with well-known architects, and you start out with well-known, you know, with the well-known celebrities that are sponsoring this, it brings the press along, and this is what helps it. We did a series of seminars where the architects talked about it and talked about using wood. You create, you know, along with it, standalone microsites, websites that link to our website, but are standalone websites because it really allows us to see where we are on each individual project. The press coverage was for this one was you know, well beyond what we expected. Very, very good. National television, national radio, and also throughout Europe on there. But what really surprised us was when we had the discussion with the architects, we saw that there was a camera in front and a design magazine, Design, out of Italy, was actually live streaming this discussion with the architects over Facebook Live. And we were absolutely shocked to see that 27,000 people were following this discussion live on Facebook. 27,000 people. You start talking about the outreach. That, to me at least, that blew me away. We didn't expect anything like that, that people are actually sitting on their computer watching these architects talking about wood. Sometimes you get really lucky. We just moved these pieces now from where they were to Barcelona. There's a new design museum in Barcelona, so we've got them there, where they'll be up until Interzoom in Germany. So those of you that are going to Interzoom in Cologne in May, you'll see these pieces on the AHEC stand there. But in the interim, from when we did this to when we moved them to Barcelona, one of the architects that was involved in this won the Pritzker Prize. Not only that, but won the Pritzker Prize 1 week before we did our new event in Barcelona. So even though these were pieces that the Spanish media, the European media had seen before, the fact that this was the first public appearance by the Pritzker Prize-winning architect since winning it, suddenly we had, again, all of the press, you know, come out, and again, you run through, you do seminars, you invite other architects to come in, and so here's a project that we had that just continues and continues to generate interest. A similar one we did last year, again, in Italy. Italy's another country that's, you know, fairly big, or has been a fairly big market, but again, very, very heavy into white oak. So part of our brief is no white oak. So we worked with a sculptor and a furniture maker working together during the Fashion Week in Milan, which if you've never been, I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. You have all over the city all these different installations, and it's everything from the automobile industry showing their, you know, futuristic, crazy new designs, and all the clothing companies and everything else. And as part of that, we had an installation right downtown in the center square at the university, where they were essentially doing a live demonstration of steam bending of white oak on the stand during out the whole week. And they actually built this, I don't even know what to call it, but they ended up building this thing during that whole week. And again, it's creating the buzz around that, bringing the press in, getting that story out, talking about red oak. Why is it important? Because it's such a big part of our forest. And we got more, you can see the thing behind it there, but we got more television, radio, press coverage, national press, not just trade press, but national press, talking about, oh, you've got more trees growing than are disappearing in the States? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, you can use wood and it's not bad. So it creates platforms, not only to talk about the material and talk about design and everything else, but it creates a platform to start the dialogue on the use of wood and the environmental impacts of using wood. And this is one of the most important things that come out of these. And of course, we're able to tell as we go through, we start looking at hits and Google Analytics. We did the smile, talk about it in a minute. The Milan thing, you can start seeing these peaks as people are driven towards the website from a lot of these different projects. The second thing I wanted to talk about is these new technologies. There's things now, there's markets that have never been open to American hardwoods before, to tempered hardwoods, that are now open to us through things like CLT and through, you know, for structural, but also through thermally modified, TMT. We're starting to see a lot of uses. The Europeans, of course, love their external joinery. It's either got to be, a softwood heavily treated with chemicals, or it's going to be a tropical wood. Until now, thermal modification can suddenly change that. We started going back about 10 years ago. We tested the first thermally modified boards made out of American hardwoods. And the way we did is not just testing the boards. We worked with a famous furniture designer. We had this bench. That's the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, the design museum in London. This bench has been sitting out there now since 2009. And we have students from and grad students and faculty from the Imperial College in London that have been monitoring how well this has been holding up, how the colors changed, how that, you know, is it cracking, is it doing anything else? So it's sort of an ongoing experiment for us. And this thing has held on much, much better than anyone expected. It's a little grayer now than you see there. But it's solid, nothing's buckling, nothing's moving, there's no cracks, it's performing very, very well. So this gives us, again, that opportunity moving forward. It's actually a very, very beautiful seat. And we're starting to see more, and now we're saying, how else can this be used? We worked with Asif Khan, who's a pretty famous architect in the UK, to do a playground using thermally modified wood for a school in a downtrodden area of London, in a low-income area of London. So we got this famous architect designer to go out and kind of put together this playhouse in the backyard of the school for the kids out of thermally modified American ash. And we're able to see this now, and we have the same thing. We have the Imperial College wood science students and wood science faculty now are going to be monitoring this thing over the next few years and see how well it's performing and how the kids love it. And it's, another moving one. So here you see the kids coming out and enjoying it. And again, this, when you start talking about with a famous architect, this is something where the architect's time was donated. We donated the wood. We got AirUp engineers to donate their time in designing and putting this up. And really, the only thing we had to pay for was the actual manufacturer on the site. But the fact that this was going in essentially as a charitable donation to a low-income school in a low-income area of London, that creates the press. That is, there's got to be a bite. There's got to be something for the press to focus on if you want to keep your name and you want to keep things moving. We're starting to see lots and lots of uses now of thermally modified timber around the world. This is the Museum of European and Mediterranean Civilizations in Marseille, France. And yes, what you see back there, that is the Mediterranean Sea. So this is in a very moist, very humid environment. And again, everything you see here, not only the decking, but all of this trellis work is all done with thermally modified American ash. The Disney store in Beijing, also totally clad in thermally modified American ash. And this is a new project that's just come online within the last month. This is down on the southern coast of Turkey, and it's a whole waterfront setting. You've got this bridge here, but you've got a series of decks and gazebos, again, all made out of thermally modified American hardwoods. And, you know, again, we'll have the opportunity to see how these are performing, but 10 years ago, that would have been tropical wood, or it would have been heavily treated softwood. These kinds of big projects are now open to American hardwoods for the first time because of this technology. And you start looking at other niche markets. You look at things now, we have two companies in the UK that are now making windows again out of wood, and they're using thermally modified wood. And I was at the British Timber Trade Federation meeting last week, and both of those window manufacturers were there. And they were telling us that back in about 1985, 86, about 90% of interior exterior windows in the UK were wood. By 2006, it was less than 10%. Wood had less than 10% of that market. And they feel very strongly, people like wood, they don't like all the problems with the splitting and this, but by using the thermally modified, which is extremely stable, they're able to start using wood again in these internal windows, these internal external windows. And we're starting to see a regeneration now of the wood window industry in the UK, and I think we'll begin to see it other places as well. And again, this was a market that was largely lost to us that now is coming back because of these new technologies we've invested in. Timber and construction is the next one. There's a lot of talk, there's a lot of chatter about this. This is something we looked at going back several years ago because we feel very strongly that there's a huge opportunity for large volumes of low-grade timber to feed this market. Things like low-grade tulip wood. Now, those of you that do tulip wood or yellow poplar, you don't have a lot of markets for your low-grade timber, do you, right now? What happens if we can create huge demand for huge volumes of that low-grade timber? And this is where it's coming out. And again, when you talk to specifiers, this is architects. And we first started talking to them a couple years ago. Almost none of them were aware of hardwoods in structural applications. Oh, you can't do that, softwoods. You can't use hardwoods in structural applications, they're not aware of that. That's important because when you give them information and they find out that it's possible and the things we've showed them, you go back and talk to them and say, you know, having this information, is this gonna make you very much more likely or more likely to specify American hardwoods in the future? And we're seeing across the board that, yes, the architects are telling us they like this information, especially when you combine it with the environmental information, and yes, that will change our attitudes. We're seeing the attitudes change, and down the road, hopefully we'll see a change in behaviors, and we'll see a lot more use of this moving forward. There's a lot of buzz around the world on these high towers coming in, and there's a lot of reason for it. You take a look. This was one of the first ones in the UK, but if you start taking a look at how it compares with steel and glass, there's a couple of things that make it completely different. First of all, this building, for example, this was built off-site, four carpenters assembled it at the rate of one story a week. Because it's not heavy like a steel or a concrete building, it requires very little in the way of a foundation to be dug out, so you don't have these great big huge foundations like you need with tall buildings out of steel or out of concrete. Has a quarter of the weight, they perform extremely well in things like earthquake tests because the wood is flexible. So it performs extremely well. So we're thinking markets Japan and so forth. This is specifically made for areas with seismic issues. But this is the one that starts to get their attention. This same building made out of CLT compared to that same building made out of glass or steel, this saves 306 tons of carbon. 306 tons of carbon less in this building than an equivalent building made out of anything else. As communities, as governments start looking at green buildings, start looking at carbon footprint of things, wood has a fantastic story to tell that we'll get into a little bit more. This one is gonna be fantastic. This was just approved about 3 months ago in Stockholm. It's expected to be completed in 2023, but it's gonna be 34 stories tall, all wood, 34 stories tall. And, you know, we call it the Eiffel Tower effect because you remember back when the Eiffel Tower was first built, this big tall thing out of iron, it created a whole revolution. Everybody started building out of iron. After the Eiffel Tower came up, the whole wrought iron district in New York, the first skyscrapers in New York, all came off of that. And this is where you start the ball rolling. And I think we're right now at the precipice where this can go all softwoods or we can have a huge part in this moving forward. We saw this several years ago, and of course, before you can even get started, you need to have all of the data behind you. So again, part of our funding, part of our money, is not the glamorous part of promotion, but we had to take this different American species and we had to have them tested against the building codes. And we started looking at CLT panels that we had made out of the different American hardwood species. And all of a sudden, you look at the softwood, which is what almost all CLT panels are made of right now, and you can compare the performance of the hardwood CLT panels, and they far outperform the softwood panels. They're much stronger, they have better rolling shear, they have much better strength to weight ratios. This gets the engineers and the architects really excited because you can get the same strength with smaller beams, with smaller pillars, without, you know, without having to have these great big giant slabs. You can still get the same strength. We think all of the evidence is pointing in the direction that this could be a big thing for us moving forward. So again, how do you get the ball rolling? We started a couple years ago at AHEC. We made the first hardwood CLT panels out of tulip wood. Worked with an architect out of the UK, whose father actually happened to have been a student of M.C. Escher. He was always really interested in M.C. Escher's endless stair, that no matter what angle you looked at the stairs, you could either be going up or down. He wanted to do this in a 3D, sort of way, and we ended up, for the London Design Festival back in 2015, putting up the endless stairs right here along the bank of the Thames. This was all tulipwood CLT. It could hold up to 5,000 people at once. Not that we ever had that many on it, but again, the strength, even on these pieces that are coming way out there, the strength to the weight was so high that they had no issues at all with, you know, having to count the number of people that went up, and it sat there for about 6 months on the bank of the Thames, and it, you know, again, generated huge PR for us. But they were small panels. For this to be commercial, you really need to be able to show that large panels work also. So this year's London Design Festival, we decided to really think big. And we looked at using another CLT project, but we wanted to use one that used large panels, like the kind of panels that would be required to make big buildings out of CLT. And this, we put together the Smile, again, working with a very famous, she's Canadian, but she's UK-based, Alison Brooks, and AirUp, probably the most well-known structural engineering firm in the world. Donated quite a bit of their time towards this as well, and we ended up building this, what we called the Smile, that sat in front. That's the Chelsea College of Arts behind it, and this sat out there for about 3 months during the London Design Festival. Over 50,000 people visited it in person to go in and see, you know, what it was like, what it was all about. Well, more animation. This is great. here you can see it on the upper right being built. But again, just doing that is not enough. How do you then maximize the PR coverage? How do you maximize the number of people that hear about this, that start talking about it? And there it is on the inside. And this is what a lot of the architects, and I'll show you a project in a minute, because we've got the first commercial project now using this, is about to open up. And he loved the fact that with the panels, it could be the interior wall as well as the exterior wall. We got the American ambassador to the UK to come out and open up the event. Of course, that in itself helps to bring in some press, as does having the architects involved. The materials are out there, of course, as people come by, you know, what is this? We give them the information on forestry in the US, on our growth to removal ratios and so forth. But we also did a series of seminars. This is Andrew Lawrence, some of you may know him. He is AirUp Engineers. He is their wood guy. He's a huge supporter of what we're doing. He does a lot of buildings around the world out of wood. He does a lot of staircases and so forth. He's probably the best known wood, you know, structural engineer in wood anywhere in the world. And these are the kind of people then that you start to get to be your ambassadors. Because I can stand up there and talk to people, but a building engineer, I guarantee you, is not going to listen to a word I say. You put Andrew Lawrence up on these, you know, series of events, talking to other structural engineers, and then you're getting somewhere, because they will listen to other structural engineers. So we had a whole series of things, of course, another microsite on there. The press coverage on this, because it was part of the whole London Design Festival thing, was absolutely, by far and away, the best thing that we'd ever done. You start looking at coverage. Here's CNN. Look at, stronger than concrete, why this new material could define our age. That's CNN saying that. Here we have the Financial Times. Then you start looking at some of, you know, design and wallpaper, some of the leading design magazines in the world picking this up. And then added to that, the social media, the online stuff. And when we start tweeting ours out, and then we see them getting picked up by things like, again, Design Milk, 1.47 million followers to that, and they picked ours up. National Building Museum, 220,000. This one, Wallpaper Magazine, 1.5 million. So once those start getting picked up, then it takes on a life of its own. And people that are subscribed to the Twitter feed of Wallpaper Magazine or National Building, they're the people you want to reach. They're the ones that are following these things. So we ended up, we didn't even know we had a Chinese television station, came out and did a half an hour documentary on it. We weren't even aware of it. Our office in China told us this was on the air. Here we have BBC, did a whole report on it. And at the end of the day, we ended up with, of course, and still counting now, online 5.3 million different pickups in print magazines, newspapers all over the world. 5.3 million different pickups. And online, 290 million views and counting so far, people that have seen this one project. So it's, again, it's how you take that, how you keep that ball rolling and keep things moving forward. So I told you before, we now have the first commercial project that's using hardwood CLT, that's using American tulip wood CLT. And this is a Maggie's house in the UK. If you don't know Maggie's house, think of it as like our Ronald McDonald houses. These sit next to hospitals, and essentially they're cancer treatment centers. And they have in their information, they have in their rooms for families to come and rest that are visiting their people. And it's designed to be a kind of an oasis for people that just found out that one of their loved ones has cancer. Famous architects have been building these all over England for years. It's a real prestige thing for an architect to be asked to do it. So for us to get involved in this and for them to use the hardwood CLT, because they wanted the panels visible from the inside as well as from the outside, and they thought the wood. And to double it up, they're actually doing the exterior cladding now also in TMT. So here we have one project, first commercial project, and it's using both the CLT panels for the structure of the building and also using our thermally modified ash, the TMT, for the exterior cladding of the building. So here we have one that we weren't involved at all in the financing or funding or doing anything with it, but this project was a direct result of the work that we had done with his architects moving forward. And he now has a new one on the books that's going to go up in 2019 in the UK. And again, this is going to be tulip wood CLT, an office building. So again, starting slow, it's only going to be four stories, but now suddenly we're going to have two buildings showing how well this works, and two buildings done by a very well-known architect who, again, has really become an ambassador for American hardwoods. We look at CLT production in Europe right now, it's almost all softwoods, but it is absolutely skyrocketing. Look at this, we're looking at, you know, at 900,000 cubic meters that are being produced. If we can get a small percentage of that to not be Nordic timber or Nordic softwoods, but to be in low-grade tulip wood, for example, that could be a huge, huge benefit for the sawmills. If you have a high-volume release for your low-grade tulip wood, this could be, I think, a lifesaver for a lot of companies moving forward. And again, we want to kind of keep control of this, so we've gone ahead and we've bought hardwoodclt.com.org info, hardwoodclt.org.com info. We're not sure what we're going to do with those yet. But we wanted to make sure that we kept that as part of a generic promotion, so we own those domains right now, and we'll see what we do with them later. And it's not just CLT. We're seeing a lot more use, structural use, going back to when AHEC did all of the studies back in 2006, had five different American species accepted into the building codes in the UK. That started out the portcullis house with these white oak beams. This is Portcullis House, is where the members of parliament in the UK have their offices. In fact, yesterday, the terrorist attack in England happened right in front of this building. This sits right across the street from Big Ben in Westminster. But now we have a real exciting one. Now we have the largest white oak glulam beams that have ever been done. This is the Lord's Cricket Ground in Regent's Park in central London. And These huge white oak glulam beams are going to be holding this sail that's going to, you know, provide shade for the cricket audiences when they sit through the 3-day long matches there in that British sunshine that they get all year. The final one I want to talk about, you know, again, is how do you capitalize on the green credentials? We have a lot of stories. I know I've talked to you before. We did the life cycle work. Essentially, we have a strategy that's really based on three different things. the FIA data, the forest inventory analysis data from the Forest Service, the life cycle stuff that we had worked, and then the Seneca Creek study, which a lot of you may know, which is the risk assessment, basically with the conclusion that the risk of hardwood coming out of the United States is low risk for being illegal. That study right now, and you see it's one of our three cornerstones of our environmental messaging, we're in the process of updating that. The first study was done in 2008. Needs to be updated. The controlled wood standards have changed in FSC. There's some of the laws in between Europe and Japan, other countries have changed. So we're updating this. As part of that, I can't stress this enough, as part of that, we need input from the industry on your log buying patterns and so forth. AHEC members would have received from me yesterday an email with a link to an online, it should take you about 15 minutes, an online survey to fill out. I can't overemphasize how important it is because for this study to be accepted by governments overseas, for it to have credibility, it needs to be peer-reviewed. And if we have an industry with 1,000 sawmills and we're basing the decisions, or we're basing our claims on surveys coming in from 20 companies, it's very likely we won't pass the peer review process. We need as many people as possible, and I'll be sending it to Linda, I think to forward to her her members, Tom the same, and hopefully Lorna, for as many people as possible to fill this out, because it will be the underpinning of our ability to claim under due diligence laws, our ability to claim that the risk of American hardwoods being illegally harvested is very low. If we don't have the data, we can't make that claim. So it's important that as many people as possible do this. The FIA data is the other one that's, you know, we all know it's there. It's not in the most easy to read or easy to access way. This one? Virginia? Yeah, this just a graph just goes through the last of the FIA, you know, showing growth to removals and then the standing timber. So this information is there, but how do you make it useful? I'd be happy to send this to you if you want. But how do you make that information useful? And this is where we kind of got together. If you go onto the FAA site, it's very difficult to navigate. How do you get what you want? We tried to find a way. How do you make this user-friendly? And what we came up with, actually, is we're doing, as part of our new website that's going to roll out in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have an interactive map where it's going to bring all of that FIA data to life. And essentially what you're going to have on the map, you'll be able to go in and you'll be able to put in, first of all, any species, and you can do it nationally or you can do it state by state. It'll give you the standing timber, it'll give you the growth to removals, it'll give you the overall growth rates. You know, here's Indiana, for example, and I think we had, what, all species in Indiana. Here's your growth in Indiana. Here is your harvesting rate, your removal rate. So here is your growth to removal overall, and this is the standing timber. So we'll have this information available for every single state. So this, again, when you have a customer in Europe that's buying, you know, your walnut or is buying your oak from Indiana and wants a little more information on, you know, how sustainable is the resource, when this is something that you can print off, that state-specific one, and send it to them. And it can be per species, or it can be all hardwood species within that state or within the nation itself. And in fact, it's going to go one further, and this, I think, is one of the more interesting new little niches that we came up with. This little box on here is going to give you, and it's not going to be on the state ones, it's going to be on the national ones, which I can talk about at a different time if you want. But essentially what this is going to give you is the time required based on current growth to removal ratios of that species. It gives you the time required to replace 1 cubic meter of wood. So if you're sending in a container 10 cubic meters, or you're using in a different project 5 cubic meters, and you want to talk to your customers or the architects, one of the ways you can say is, yeah, that's 10 cubic meters, but this is going to give you the number of seconds that it took, or the time it took. So you're talking 10 cubic meters of red oak, you're talking 2 seconds worth of growth to regeneration. And this is something that we've seen has really resonated with architects and designers. In fact, we're taking that information, we've started a new website called Grown in Seconds, I'll show you in a second, where we're able to take, and we have, you'll get as part of this map, you'll be able to type in the species you want, and it'll give you that growth to removal ratio. And this, when you start talking to architects, particularly because they all have in their mind that 50 football fields a second that's disappearing in the tropics. They all have that in their head. When you can change that narrative and say, hey, see this beautiful thing we made? This is 2.5 seconds worth of regeneration. So while the slide's been on, all of this wood's already been regenerated in the forest. That's powerful messaging for these guys, because they can understand that. You tell them that, you know, whoa, we have a growth removal of 2.4 to 1, and we have, you know, 20 billion cubic meters. That doesn't mean anything to them. When you tell them this particular thing they have took 40 seconds, you know, to grow the wood in these, this standalone site grown in seconds, goes beyond that. We go through a whole series of different projects, and we give not only how many seconds it took to regenerate, but we give the carbon footprint using our LCA data for all of these, for all of these projects moving forward. And we're able to do this now for everything that we do. We take our material sheet, the smile, for example, absolutely huge. And there was a lot of wastage in this, because to make these panels, you've got to rip all of the different boards to size. There was a lot of wastage, a lot of energy used. But on that, we're able now to calculate not only the full environmental footprint of this, but also the replacement time. You know, we're talking less than 5 minutes for that wood, everything, including all the wastage, to be back in the forest. But also look at the overall carbon footprint of this thing. And when you consider the wood was harvested in the U.S., the logs went to a sawmill in the U.S., they were sawn, they were kiln dried, they were packaged, they were put on a truck to a port, they were shipped to the U.K., or they were shipped originally to Germany. In Germany, they manufactured the panels, shipped those panels to the U.K., and then put this thing up on site. Despite all of that, this is actually, the carbon footprint is actually negative. There's more carbon stored in there than all of the carbon that was used in every single process of that, including the transport. A couple of reasons that's true is, of course, the saved carbon, but also as part of the manufacturing process, all of the offcuts in the factory that we use were burned as fuel and replacing the fossil fuels. So again, that big piece with everything is carbon negative. You can't make anything else. I don't care if it's bamboo. That's carbon negative that goes through that many processes. And these are the messages to get out to the architects and designers. We talk about these as well, the Spanish ones. And you know, again, here you have this tulip wood one, 8 seconds for this wood to be regenerated in the forest. You know, the cherry grows a little slower. Here you have 10 seconds. This is a solid chair. These kind of things to the designers, to the press, and to the public at large, when you can change the dialogue from how many trees did you have to cut down to make this to how quickly are those trees regenerated, you've changed the game. And that's really the goal of doing this moving forward. And we know that it makes a big difference. These are interviews with specifiers, so designers and architects. On finding the information on the LCA and learning that, look at between, we're seeing a study, but 36, much more likely, 40%. So you've got well over three, you've got 3 out of 4 architects saying, by having this information, I am definitely more likely now to specify in my next project American hardwoods. And this is where you're showing, where you're changing people's attitudes, and then you can see later on changing their behavior. The last thing, we did a fantastic documentary with one of Mexico's most famous television programs, Por el Planeta, or essentially Mexico's Jacques Cousteau. Did 3 different trips and talked about the hardwood industry in the United States, talked about our growth removal ratio. If you go on our AHEC YouTube, you can see not only videos of all of the different projects I talked about, but also snippets from this. And again, this is reaching literally tens of millions of people, not only in Mexico, but throughout Latin America. It's on Televisa's cable channel. And that's all I had. Thank you all very much for your attention. And Linda, thank you very much for the opportunity. For structural, white oak, I think it was white oak, red oak, hard maple, ash, and yellow poplar, tulip wood.
Hello? Yeah. Thank you, Mike, and we wish you